News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Pete Callender here talking about the redistricting ruling that came down in the three-judge panel of Superior Court judges out of Wake County. And joining me now is Alfredo Rodriguez. He is the founder of Dice Communications, based here in Charlotte, and previously worked in Washington, D.C., on several Republican elected official campaigns and organizations and the like. And welcome to the show. Alfredo, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Pete?
Yeah, I'm doing well, absolutely. So first, give us a little bit about yourself, kinds of campaigns and candidates that you have worked for and with.
Well, I've been, fortunate to be doing this for about two decades now. Political media consultant, work with Republican candidates and conservative organizations and groups across the country. Have been fortunate to work with a lot of Republicans and groups here in North Carolina as well. So,
all right. So, I should ask, first, before I start going into the ruling here. Did you get a chance to read the 260 pages from the judges?
I did not. I read the cliff notes.
There you go. So one of the things they talk about, and I think this probably might be right in your wheelhouse here, is that they talk about how the plaintiffs were arguing essentially for proportional representation to be reflected in the makeup of the maps, right? But the judges said that, look, these statewide races that you're comparing the district races to, they have very little in common. The races don't take into account the individual needs and the issues that are important to all of the different districts. They also treat candidates as inanimate objects in that they do not consider the personality or the qualifications of each candidate or political baggage that they may carry, as well as a host of other considerations that voters use to select a candidate. Also, they assume voters will vote along party lines. These were, in my estimation, I've been saying this for years, the candidates matter, the campaigns matter, and so you can overcome some of this stuff that the plaintiffs are arguing is baked in the cake all the time. You can overcome some of this stuff, can you not? Or maybe am I completely wrong on that?
I completely agree with you, Pete, and I've said this numerous times. North Carolina redistricting is always a deja vu moment. Democrats and progressive groups in North Carolina and across the country, like groups run by Eric Holder and those folks, they just delight in the moment that they can challenge in the courts constitutionally drawn districts that elected representatives have been given the right to draw. So this is nothing new for North Carolina. It's not something that'll be new 2, 4, 6, maybe even 10 years from now as well. So,
yeah, it's one of the things that's sort of this bit of oxymoron conflicting messages, seems like, where there's this constant push among people on the left to have historically sweeping, transformative either policy ideas or lawsuits or rulings. Like, everything is like, oh my gosh, this is historic. But at the same time, they also make the arguments that, oh no, this is, the norm. This is what most people already agree with us on all of these things. And it seems like they try to have it both ways. And I think this is another example. There seems to be some bit of performance going on when it comes to this ruling. I'm reading some of the responses and it's like, look at what the judges said. It was a partisan gerrymander. Aha! It's like, yeah, but you lost because it's not illegal to do that.
Right. And, Republican redistricting gets a lot of attention. But, where is the attention when it comes to the maps that were drawn in Maryland or Illinois or Oregon that Democrats, use the same tactics and, same process to create maps.
Yeah. Well, and also I'm trying to find, I've got here in the stack of show prep that there was an analysis done on, I think it's 538 on where we stand. I'm sure you're probably, oh, here it is. Yeah. Do 25 states have finished redrawing their maps? Analysis from 538 found that compared to the old maps, there are now six more Democrat-leaning seats, one fewer Republican-leaning seat, and four fewer highly competitive seats. So it seems like Democrats are doing what they can, despite having lost seats, right, in California and New York, which makes me wonder maybe Cuomo should not have killed so many people with his COVID policies. But, like, you've got these states that have lost seats, but they're still obviously able to draw districts that benefit the Democratic Party, and that makes a difference at a national level.
Absolutely. And, you know, let me address real quickly, you know, Democrats are often talking about fair maps and 50-50 maps. And I'm not sure if you're a follower of the Yellowstone series, but
I am.
There's a great line there from John Dutton where he says there's no such thing as fair. Fair is what one side decides and the other can live with.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what the redistricting process is. You know, to the victor go the spoils.
Which seemed like a perfectly legitimate and reasonable and acceptable standard for the last 140 years in North Carolina for some reason. But something happened right around 2010. I'm not sure what. But now all of a sudden, all of those rules that everybody was happy to live with, now they're not so happy to live with them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Democrats want to force an uncertainty on candidates and voters. You know, the process and the methods were fair. The sooner candidates know the lines, the sooner the people in North Carolina can go ahead and make an informed decision to elect their representatives in the General Assembly and in Congress.
So let me ask you now about Joe Biden and his visit down to Georgia. First off, messaging fail, I think. This seems like in your wheelhouse as well. If you are Stacey Abrams and this is like your big issue, why are you not meeting with the president on his trip to your town on your issue?
Well, I think the very easy answer is I don't think that very many Democrats want to stand side by side with Joe Biden these days.
Yeah.
You know, he has been an epic failure, whether it comes to, you know, the economy, whether it comes to the supply chain crisis, whether it comes to the border crisis that we're suffering, and even on the international stage where our enemies continue to get stronger and dig their heels in against American interests. So, you know, I can certainly understand why she wouldn't want to stand by him and take up this fight with him. But, you know, that's all on the shoulders of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Also, I thought a pretty bold strategy to accuse Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema of being Bull Connor. That's the preferred approach to get them over onto your let's blow up the filibuster campaign. Do you think that'll work?
Yeah, well, and you know, and the hypocrisy with that is if one Republican votes with a Democrat majority, all of a sudden the legislation happens to be bipartisan. But if one Democrat votes with Republicans, it's considered stalling and ruining what the president's agenda might want to be.
Well, and in fact, it's two Democrats, and it could
That's
be
right.
more. Yeah, like
and it could be, and it could be more. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think there are probably some Democrats that are happy Manchin and Sinema are taking the heat, and they would probably object to some of this stuff that's in this this federal takeover of elections, which is what that bill is, and they're going to try to blow up the filibuster to get it done. But I don't think they actually have a plan to make that work. So what's the point of expending this political capital? Can you make any sense of that?
Well, I think it's nothing short of it energizes their base. It's what their base wants to hear. I don't think at the end of the day that. That base is going to be enthusiastic enough to outturn out Republicans that are going to come out in droves this coming election cycle.
Yeah. Alfredo Rodriguez, founder of Dice Communications, that's D-Y-C-E, communications.com, based here in Charlotte, political consultant. Thanks so much for your time. Good to chat with you, and we'll have you
Thank
back
you,
on.
Pete.
All right, take care, sir. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. 25 states have now finished redrawing their congressional maps using data from the census. 538.com did an analysis, and they found that there are now six more Democrat-leaning seats, one fewer Republican-leaning seats, or seat, and four fewer highly competitive seats. So the new maps, for now, seemingly benefit Democrats, despite the fact that more people are actually moving to red states. Blue states, California, New York, and Illinois were the top three to lose seats following the census. Texas, Florida, and North Carolina, top three gainers. North Carolina came in third. We picked up a congressional seat behind Florida and Texas. Two of the new Democratic-leaning seats come from Illinois, which also lost one of its overall seats. The maps were drawn to force Republican representatives Adam Kinzinger and Darren LaHood, as well as Mike Boston, Mary Miller, to primary each other. So they double bunked. That's what the Democrats did up in Illinois. They lost a total seat, and then they made the two Republicans, they made them all primary each other. So they double bunked two sets. That's how Democrats do it in Illinois. Oregon has also added two more Democrat-leaning seats after gaining a representative and drawing out one highly competitive district. So Oregon drawing two D seats. Many states are simply taking formerly competitive seats and making them solid red or blue. They cite New Jersey as an example of that. On a positive note for the GOP, 538.com writes that, quote, redistricting has not drastically changed the House landscape so far. That's good for Republicans since the old maps already tilted the House playing field in their favor. Something to keep in mind here is that because Republicans lost a lot of the swing districts under Trump, it means that Democrats now hold those seats. They have to try to defend them, and that's a harder proposition this time around. So that's why the map favors Republicans, particularly in a year where minority party tends to make a lot of gains. Another factor influencing the midterms is that 23 House Democrats have announced so far that they're not going to seek re-election. 23 House Democrats not seeking re-election. Why are they doing this? This is something that everybody watches because it's a leading indicator. These are people that know, they're obviously politicos, right? They're politicians, they know what the polling is, they can read the tea leaves, they make, they're going to make a career decision here to what? Probably go become a lobbyist, go make a bunch of money based off of their connections, and they know they're not going to be in the majority. And it's not as much fun to be in a legislative building when you are in the minority. You don't get stuff done. All you can do is try to block stuff. That's it. And be attacked. That's it. Like, those are your options. Right. So a lot of these Democrats are retiring. And in addition, you got President Biden's low approval rating that's expected to contribute to Republican wins in the House this fall. Back to the Charlotte Observer editorial board's ridiculous piece that they published today. They say that on Tuesday, these three judges ruled unanimously that the local coup, which is the redistricting process. I mean, think about that. They're calling it a coup. The fact that Republicans followed the Constitution and their announced and constitutional, legal, legitimate criteria when drawing the maps. Because the Observer editorial board, they want more Democrats elected to these offices. And if they don't get enough Democrats elected, then it's a threat to the democracy. They didn't have a problem with this, by the way, before. Anyway, cynics had predicted this ruling by simply looking at the affiliations of the judicial panel. Note that they say cynics predicted it because you had two Republicans and one Democrat. So cynics predicted this. I got to tell you, I'm kind of cynical on this stuff. I did not predict it. I thought the Republicans would have gone along with the Democrats on this. I did. I did not expect the Democrat judge to go with the Republicans. But I also find it interesting that you call people cynics for assuming that the Republican judges are going to rule a certain way. But then later on in the piece, They talk about how the Supreme Court, they call on the Supreme Court to overturn this ruling. The Supreme Court that has a 4-3 Democrat majority, unless, of course, Anita Earls recuses herself because she took money from the funder of the litigation, which I think might pose a bit of a conflict of interest. I don't know. What do you think? Maybe a little bit? Teensy weensy bit? Took $250,000 to win election to that justice seat. Now you're going to hear a case that they're funding. I don't know. Just seems, I don't know, conflicty. The judges in the redistricting case, they write that the political power in the state of North Carolina has always been invested in and derived from its citizens. Likewise, the sole and exclusive right to regulate the government of the state has always been vested in its citizens. The will of the people, as expressed in the Constitution, is the supreme law of the land. The Constitution is a restriction of powers, and those powers not surrendered are reserved to the people, to be exercised through their representatives in the General Assembly. Therefore, so long as an act is not forbidden, the wisdom and expediency of the enactment is a legislative, not a judicial decision. It is not the function of the judiciary to express the will of the people or to right perceived wrongs that are allowed by law. Even if public sentiment deems it unwise or ill-advised, that's not what the judiciary is supposed to do. Judges are often called upon to disregard or even to defy popular sentiment, creating a fundamental tension between the ideal character of the judicial office and the real world of electoral politics. Whether a law is wise or unwise, the court can give no opinion. Our province is to expound the Constitution and laws as they are made, not to make them. See, this is the limited government judicial philosophy in a nutshell. What these judges just outlined, this is the difference. This is the main difference.
Wrong stack of stuff.
Yeah, here it is. Democracy, North Carolina. See, here's the alternative approach. Given all we have seen, today's outcome is disappointing, but we remain hopeful that the state Supreme Court will recognize that we must do better and we must expect and demand more from those elected to lead our state. Right? They're demanding that the judges act as a super legislative body. That's the difference in judicial perspective. One of those is chaos and one of those is order. They go on to say in their ruling, despite the presumption of constitutionality, by the way, that is something folks who may not be aware of this, if you don't follow North Carolina politics and law, that it is to be assumed that the actions of the legislature are constitutional. Did you know that? It is well settled in this state that the courts have the power and the duty in proper cases to declare an act unconstitutional. But it has to be plainly and clearly so. If there is any reasonable doubt, it will be resolved in favor of the lawful exercise of their powers by the representatives of the people. In other words, tie goes to the legislature. Tie goes to the runner here, and the legislature is the runner. You are to automatically assume that they're not behaving in an unlawful manner. Plaintiffs request that the court strike down the enacted maps based on these criteria, and then the court said no. These judges said no. They say it's a cardinal principle in the interpretation of constitutions that they should receive a consistent and uniform construction so as to not be given one meaning at one time and another meaning at another time, even though circumstances may have so changed as to render a different construction desirable. The will of the people, as expressed in the organic law, is subject to change only in the manner prescribed by them. In other words, if you want the laws changed, then you change the laws. You don't get judges to reinterpret them. Otherwise, your constitutions aren't worth crap. This has been at the heart of these fights, the culture wars and stuff. Roe v. Wade, like all this has been at the core of it, this different judicial philosophy. Which brings me back to the McClatchy editors, these people. They say cynics predicted this ruling simply by looking at the affiliations of the judicial panel. Superior Court Judges Graham Shirley, Nathaniel Poovey, and Dawn Layton. Two Republicans and a Democrat. But more hopeful supporters of democracy. See what they're doing there? Oh, so now I'm not a supporter of democracy? Because I have a different judicial philosophy than you morons? That now I don't support democracy. This doesn't even, like, this is something I would expect to have read in my high school newspaper. This, like, this is the kind of quality journalisming that I expect at a high school level. This is silliness. It's lazy, intellectually dishonest, and vapid. Supporters of democracy hope that partisanship would not blind the Republicans to election maps clearly drawn to give Republicans not only an unfair advantage, but in many districts an insurmountable one. See, this is, again, history did not begin in 2010. Okay? The rules that were put in place, efforts to change and enact changes to the Constitution have been unfolding in this state for decades, and we are all built up based on those prior acts. The slow-moving shift away from Democrat control has been going on for a very, very long time. You guys built this infrastructure over the course of a century and a half, and now you don't like the rules anymore. Now you want the rules to be changed midstream without any kind of actual process. You want the rules to be changed so you get to have more control because you don't like the other competing political philosophy, even though it has led to growth in the state. Number three, as I went over earlier, right? It's led to growth, economic recovery. It's led to surpluses in the Treasury, which you guys said was not going to happen, by the way. You said that we were going to get bankrupted by these Republican policies. Yeah, you were wrong about that, too. So I'm just wondering, like, at some point, do you realize that you don't know what you're talking about? Does that ever become, I don't know, does that ever get on the radar that you don't know what you're talking about on this stuff? That you're not lawyers? But, no, I understand. Like, the purpose here is to send the signal to the Supreme Court Democrats, don't worry, we got your back. This is the dog whistle, right? That's what you guys, you're all about the dog whistles. This is a dog whistle. You're blowing the whistle so the Democrats on the Supreme Court hear it and know that if they engage in judicial activism and they divine a new interpretation of the Constitution in order to placate you, that you got their back. You will write glowing editorials and defend those actions, even though they're outside the bounds of the Constitution. Which, by the way, really undermines these institutions that you expect us all to sign up for and agree with and have credibility in. Like, you expect that? Yeah, when you undermine them, you shouldn't expect that anymore. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. The editors over at McClatchy, Charlotte Observer, and the News and Observer. I think there's another one. Is it the Winston-Salem Journal, I think? They say that in the end, the one Democrat judge joined her Republican colleagues, giving the ruling a false sense of unanimous approval. It's not a false sense of unanimous approval. It is actually a unanimous approval. That's what a 3-0 ruling looks like. That's what the word unanimous means. It is a ruling. It's not a false sense of unanimous approval. They all decided that the maps were constitutional. Now, that doesn't mean they have to like the maps, and it doesn't mean they have to like the absence of some criteria that would prevent partisan gerrymandering or an outlier in that regard. They say, in fact, the judges were skeptical about the fairness of the maps, but deferred to the legality of the map-making process itself. Yes, in other words, the process was constitutional. The criteria were constitutional. There's nothing unconstitutional. There's nothing illegal about the maps. And I'm sorry that you want it to be so, but it's not. That's what the law says. And what they want, what the Observer editors want, and what Democrats, but I repeat myself, with the media, they all want there to be some new interpretation of the law that makes it illegal, even though it's not. So Dean has been spamming me on the emails here. If laws are laws, why do we even need judges? Is this a serious question, Dean? Seriously? Like, I'm at the point where I might just stop reading your your emails. Because I really, like, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but at some point, I'm thinking these are just trolling types of emails. Like, here's another one. If you reduce the role of government, it will lead to anarchy. That's just stupid. If I reduce the role of government, it leads to anarchy? I mean, should I count the ways? That's stupid. Seriously. So what? If I so I have like a complete authoritarian tyrannical government, and let's say we loosen a single law under that regime, and that's anarchy. That leads to anarchy? That's, see what I mean? This is a logical fallacy. If you were, he says, more disruptions and violence. If you were basing all your decisions on what was best for you or what was best for the majority, you would always choose what's best for you at the expense of bettering humanity. That is what you call a false dichotomy or false choice. This is the beauty of the capitalist model, which is the recognition that when people behave in their own self-interest, more people are actually, more people benefit. Yeah, it's true. More people benefit. Oh, and by the way, Dean, who are these, to quote Milton Friedman, who are these angels that are in government? Where are they now? Right, like, am I to believe that, like, all of the bad people, that they would not go into government if government keeps doing more? See, Dean was riffing here off of a comment that I had made earlier about how if you don't like the influence or impact and importance of the redistricting efforts at the national level, if you don't like this heightened stake that we are playing for, if you don't like that, then reduce the size and the role of the government. And then this stuff doesn't take on such gravity, right? That is, by the way, that's a universal sort of principle. If you don't like politics, you reduce the size of government, thereby making politics less important. That is an obvious thing, I guess, to folks besides Dean here, who says that's why there's a government in all its different forms to control people like you, LOL. The government is here to control people like me, people who act in our own interest. So Dean, I guess, as we are to believe, Dean does not act in his own interest. This is what I mean. Like, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm at the point now where I think I might just stop reading Dean's emails for a while, especially when you spam me with that kind of quote logic. I mentioned earlier the states that are seeing population loss. Not everybody in blue state America is moving to a far healthier red state. It only seems that way. But enough are doing so to say without a doubt it's one of the most significant trends in America today. It's a revolution of sorts. It's America's U-Haul revolution. Issuesandinsights.com. It's long been known in demography and population economics that people leave areas known for authoritarian tyranny, stagnation, stultification, crime, and excessive regulation, and they go to the opposite. They go find economic freedom, dynamism, social diversity, and good government. It's a big reason why literally hundreds of millions of people around the world have expressed their desire to emigrate to the United States. But it's true within nations as well. Mass exodus of more than a million Americans moving largely from blue states to red states continues, expressing dissatisfaction with high taxes, rampant crime, lockdowns, vaccine mandates, excessive state government regulations, a politically stifling woke culture, and lack of economic opportunity and freedom. Taken together, you look at the census data going back to 2010, and it says, it shows the top 10 mostly blue states lost almost a million people. The top 10 mostly red states gained more than a million people. In short, the blue state model is crashing and the red state model is soaring. Mark Perry at the American Enterprise Institute did the math. He looked at a set of 14 demographic, economic, and regulatory data. And what jumps out in this table is that it's pretty clear. Red states, often led by moderate Republican governors, outperform blue states when it comes to their economic dynamism. North Carolina is in this list. Florida, Texas, Arizona, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Idaho, Utah, Nevada. But North Carolina has a Republican legislature. and a majority of its Council of State seats are held by Republicans. Roy Cooper, Democrat that he is essentially benefiting from the policies enacted by Republican lawmakers in the General Assembly, which is a more powerful legislature than the governor's office. You're welcome. That's a wrap for the episode. Appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Brett Winterbull coming up next. Stick around for that. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Don't break anything while I'm gone.